miss one hell of a game.
For the ball.
Ball, get up! It's loose! Thumb
away. Plenty of leg.
Good!
It's football time in the Bluegrass. You're listening to the KSR Football Podcast.
Football is back, and that means the KSR Football Podcast is back. I'm Nick Roush, happy to get on a Zoom call with my friends Drew Franklin, Freddie Maggard, and Charles Walker. Gentlemen, it's been far too long, but we actually have football. So that means we need to be talking about it on the KSR Football Podcast. Drew, it feels like we actually might get to see some action on the gridiron this year.
Yeah, and I've been dying to do this podcast. I've missed you guys, but there was really no point in doing one when the news was changing every hour. We didn't want to do something, and then everything changed and be thrown away. But now we actually have a schedule and camp starting and things to talk about, so I'm excited.
No, I'm really excited. And we've got Hard Knocks to talk about. Charles, our boy Austin McGinnis is a Hard Knock star. He got, 30 seconds of airtime in the season opener.
Man. So,
I mean, it was electric. And I can't wait until he's in the featured role there.
I've watched half of the first episode and am catching up on that, have the second recorded, so no spoilers. Can't spoil it for me, all right?
I'm kind of the same way where Baby said, stop watching this episode. So, naturally I stopped. So I've got a little bit of catching up to do. But it feels good to have, just to hear the, like, and then like that, all of the football sounds. Freddie, just having football back is – the sound of Mike Edwards popping the crap out of Rob Gronkowski got me fired up Tuesday afternoon.
Absolutely. I mean, football is back. I mean, for the last month, 2 months, we've been dealing with projections and are we going to play? Are we not going to play? Are we going to have a schedule? But now we actually have a schedule. It's time to play. And it's time to start breaking down personnel instead of all the BS everybody's been writing about and talking about. Let's get down to football. I mean, I am so sick of the other stuff.
Oh, I love it. Freddie.
Freddie season.
Exactly. I come out when it's real, okay? You know, the amateurs can do the preseason bull stuff of projecting and guessing and all that. But when we get down to X and O's and personnel, I'm ready to go.
Oh, man. Football, it's officially back. Freddie, when they announced they were having the schedule selection show,
yeah.
A, how fired up were you? But B, have you ever seen anything like this in college football before?
Never, never, ever. And, I think Kentucky actually benefits from the schedule, to be quite honest with you. Looking at it, I mean, I break down the schedule, especially when we're talking about a condensed all-SEC slate, which is going to be very different, very difficult. This year, in my opinion, you have to break it down by tempo and physicality. So Kentucky in the first three games gets tempo teams. So Auburn with Bo Nix is going to be tempo, a mobile quarterback. Ole Miss is the same thing. Mississippi State is going to be spread them out, throws the football 83% of the time. So you're getting three tempo teams back to back to back, which is good because if you get physical teams back to back to back, you're going to be beaten up. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, one of the storylines that I'm going to follow this year is how opponents of Kentucky recover the week after playing the Cats, because you're dealing with that offensive line that is the best in the conference. And they're going to beat you up. And you're dealing with three running backs that are 200 pounds plus, and they're going to beat you up. I want to see how opponents bounce back after playing Kentucky.
And I like, too, that you get a week to at least look at what Ole Miss can do on film. They're the second game of the season. And Mississippi State, you got two first-year head coaches. And you like getting those teams early on because they're going to be figuring out the kinks, how their personnel fits within their system. They don't have any tune-up games. And you aren't getting them the first game of the year. So you at least have a general idea of what your offense is going to be like. It's not like Eli Drinkwitz out there who's like, yeah, we're not going to tell them a quarterback because we're going to make Alabama prepare for all four of them. It's like,
like that's going to matter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Alabama needs to watch film. Like, they don't have 50 guys ready to watch film.
174 analysts on their staff, so they'll be okay. But I agree with Drew. You know, I listened to the radio show, and I think Drew makes a great point that without a camp, without an off season, and without the normal preparation for the season, it's going to be extremely difficult for some of these teams to bring everything together, especially the teams with the new coaches like Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Missouri down the line. You know, I think this schedule works perfectly for Kentucky.
Oh, perfect. Perfect schedule, Drew. Doesn't that sound great? Like, when was the last time something was perfect for Kentucky football?
Well, you know, I've heard a lot of fans say that of all the years for this to happen, it happened a year we were set to be good. And even I was like that at first. But I'm starting to think this might be the perfect year for it to happen because I think experience and having veterans on your roster is going to go a long way and add some extra wins to your win total just because, I mean, it's not just – the experience on the field, I think they're going to be taking things a little more seriously. I heard Drake Jackson talk to Tom Leach about how it's all business around there. You know, I don't think you're going to see Drake Jackson out at any parties. Not that, you know, football players at other schools will, but I think having senior leadership and guys knowing this could be their last shot, well, at least helping that category of keeping guys staying extra safe. And I think in turn, that's going to add lots of wins because I think throughout the year, teams are going to find there'll be outbreaks here and there, key players. I think the ones with the experience and that are sticking with the strictly business attitude will have the best success.
I saw Drake is down to 292 as well. Did you see that?
He looks trim.
Yeah, he does.
We got rosters yesterday. We also got to talk to players in opening day of training camp. We can go a little bit more in depth into that later on. But I just wanted to mention, Drew, to your point, it's kind of weird. Like, normally the first day of training camp, we'd be asking guys like Chuck and – you're like, oh, what's the next few weeks going to be like? And he just would roll your eyes at you just talking about how awful it's going to be. And yesterday it was the exact opposite where they're just talking about how blessed they are to, like, be able to practice because it's a luxury that most teams don't have anymore. And Wayne and Young said it best. I mean, I don't know where he's falling on mock drafts right now. I would think he'd be kind of mid to late with a chance to really rise up the board. And as he put it, he's like, guys got a lot on the line this year. And when you have a senior-laden team who has a lot on the line, they're going to do whatever they have to do to make sure that that they can actually play the season as scheduled.
Hey, I think it's funny you bring that up. It immediately made me think of, you know, some practices, whether it be summer or fall camp, where – your body 100% fine, but your mind is like, oh God, we got to go to practice today. It's 110 degrees. And then during that practice or another practice, maybe you like tweak an ankle. So then the next day you go to practice and you're like, man, if only my body was 100%, then I'd be pumped. It just made me think of, you know, you're saying these guys are happy. Because, you know, most of them, you never really know how good you have it until they're going to say, hey, you're not gonna play football this year. And then they're like, well, hell, we'll do anything to play. We'll show up at 4 and get the, you know, the swabs up our nose. You would have said, guys used to complain about flu shots. Now they're, you know, probably getting swabbed every day. Yeah, you never really know how good you have it until it's about to be taken away or is taken away. I just think it's funny that you bring that up. Because I used to be one of those guys where, you know, some days, God, 105 degrees out, it's a bye week, I don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. Then 1 week later, your ankle's twisted and you're like, oh man, why can't I just be 100%? And then you look back a week ago and you are 100% and you were complaining about it. Just think it's funny.
Well, and this year is also not – I mean, Stoops was even kind of mad when they called – somebody asked him about camp. And he's like, well, it's not really a training camp because they've implemented a bunch of rules And essentially, it's like so right now, Charles, they're doing the regular season practice schedule as far as like time limits and stuff. And what's that practice routine like compared to training camp and how much you're at the facility during training camp?
God, training camp, it really is just, it could be a Friday and it feels like a Monday. It could be a Monday and you think it's Friday. I mean, really, the days run together and, you know, you get to the facility at 8, and whether it is a full padded practice followed by a walkthrough or it's even your day off, it's kind of like you're there, you're watching film. So you ask camp to regular practice, what? Regular practice during a game week, we're there from 1 to 6, 7-ish. Camp, you're there at 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. I mean, really, there might be some breaks in there where, hey, you can go home for 2 hours. All right, why would I even want to do that? And if you're injured, hey, you got to stay and get treatment for these 2 hours. And then you have 30 minutes off. I mean, it is camp's a lot, but you need it. So I'm sure, sadly, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of not bad playing, but a lot of mistakes that you wouldn't normally see in the SEC the first couple of weeks because you just can't practice.
Right, right. And now, to your point, instead of having 18 hours of the facility, you can only be in the locker room for a tight 14 minutes after practice. You have 14 minutes to get changed, get showered, and get the hell out of there. There's no dilly-dallying around. There's no going over to the, you know, the DBs coming over and messing with you and talking. Like, you don't have time.
That's the whole fun. I mean, once practice is over, you all should have had camera of bye week Thursday when practice was over, just the energy in that locker room when you have a whole weekend off of literally just sitting on your couch and watching other people go at it. I mean, that was when you'd have thought there was a party in the locker room. I mean, that's crazy. Everyone's ripping their tape off, throwing it at each other, which is disgusting, but I mean, it happened.
Tape fight.
Yeah, people hanging out in the cold tub, guys that would never even swim through it are now just doing cannonballs in it and chilling. They're like, we don't have a game this week. We're good. We finally get to rest. All these bruises are going to go away, maybe. That's awesome.
I want to go back to the schedule because, Freddie, I think it's funny that, as Drew mentioned earlier, you have some fans who are like, oh, God, this year, the schedule is so tough. When I go back and look at when you played, Freddie, the schedule you played doesn't look too different than the schedule that these guys are playing.
No, we played Bama and Auburn. You know, one year we played Ole Miss and Mississippi State both. I mean, you know, it's what it is. You know, it's kind of, you call your shot. You know, if you're scared, say you're scared. There's not a team or program that is excited to be playing 10 SEC games because the level of difficulty just goes through the roof. But if you have to, the best case scenario is for an experienced team such as Kentucky, with an offensive line like it has, with that stability to be going into the year. So, you know, every team will have a doubt or a, you know, something to think about going into this. But, you know, you look at Arkansas. Arkansas got screwed bad. I feel bad for that new coach, you know.
I mean, they didn't even let Arkansas play Vanderbilt. Like, that would have been a great toilet bowl. Make it the CBS game instead of that music. You just flush the commode.
But, you know, the only certainties in this 10-game SEC schedule are, and I mean no disrespect by this, but Vanderbilt's not very good. No. I mean, let's be honest. And they're going to struggle. And Arkansas got totally screwed by the schedule. Everything else is wide open.
No, you're exactly right. And the thing that, as you mentioned earlier, when it comes down to physicality and tempo, I actually was talking to Cole Kublik, had him on the radio show yesterday morning, and, you know, we've got plenty of time to preview that Auburn game, but they got four whole new offensive linemen. Everybody except Big Cat on their defensive line is gone. Secondary's gone. That's a game where physicality can win out. And really, you go back-to-back Tennessee-Georgia, you have those two really tough stretches with Tennessee, Georgia back-to-back, yeah, and Alabama, Florida. And, you know, if you can punch them in the mouth a little bit harder earlier, if you're getting them on their heels after a tough game, that's where you can really take advantage and pull off a serious kind of upset.
Absolutely, Nick. And you know, in between that is Missouri and Vanderbilt. You know, I really do think this is the best case scenario schedule that Kentucky could have gotten. And I really like finishing with South Carolina on December the 5th at Kroger Field. I really do. I think that's going to be, you know, I've heard Matt talk about it, and I totally agree with him. It's going to be a swing game. It's going to be a deciding game. I'm surprised South Carolina is not ranked number 3 in the country going into the preseason. And Louisville ranked number 4, but, you know, it's just the way it is. Because Louisville is kind of the new South Carolina in the rankings.
Yes, you're right on that part.
So I really like finishing up with South Carolina.
Well, the reason why I like it is because their season might be over with by then. Yeah, I mean, if they don't win at Tennessee, if they don't beat Tennessee to open the year, they got Florida, a bye week with Vandy, and then Auburn, LSU, they could be 1-4 heading into the bye week. And if you're trying to keep everybody's heads mentally in the game, that's why I think that South Carolina, the wheels could fall off pretty quickly for that team.
And this could be a trying year for Muschamp, and it could be a make or break year. But every year seems to be that way for him.
And yet he's still hanging around. Drew, I want to know, what's your swing game? What's the game where if Kentucky wins this one, it's going to be a good or great season? Jared used to always say that it was that Louisville game. If you could win that first game against Louisville, that you could go bowling, great things could happen. But if you lost it, then, you know, your season's kind of down the tube before it ever really gets a chance for liftoff.
I mean, really, I don't know if there'll be one that we have in a typical year, but I'm looking at first game of the year just because really anything could be pulled out from under you at any time. Also, with it being Auburn, you bet and your whole – perspective on the next 9 games changes. If you go down to Auburn and lose by 21, you kind of, 9 more games to go. But if you go down there and beat Auburn, we start looking at each other like, holy cow, what is UK capable of doing this season? And you get real excited. And who's week 2? I know Tennessee's
Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss, as we've said, inexperienced. You're winning that. You got your Tennessee. You can never win. You've got momentum. You don't have – I just think that Auburn game, if you can win it, can change the way you're, at least from, I don't know, in the locker room, but at least the fan excitement and thinking of what that team's ceiling could be if they're 1-0 with the one win being at Auburn.
Yeah, and I saw Auburn's going to have, 17,000 fans at the game?
Students, too. Students. They're just players' family. So,
but do 17,000 fans make a difference?
No. Again, no disrespect, that's a Miami game. That's what Miami gets in, or Wake Forest or somebody like that in the ACC. So I really don't think that that's going to be a factor.
But the one thing
– I'm a little more crazy than others because I've convinced myself this is the schedule I want over any schedule we could possibly have. I'm signed up for this suicide mission here if we go 0-10. But I keep thinking about all the disadvantages Kentucky has every year. Like, Kentucky's never had 100,000 people at a home game. You know, the Auburns, Alabama's, A&M, they get that all the time, and that energy is there for recruiting and everything else, and that is a disadvantage every single year for UK. Well, that's thrown out. A lot of times, depth is a disadvantage for UK. Well, this year it might be one of the deeper teams ever. So if you just wrote down the pros and cons of what UK wants and things they can't achieve other years, whether it be the crowd or where they're based or weather, whatever – this season has gotten very neutralized towards UK being able to compete with some of these teams. Normally, they wouldn't even be able to.
You say you love this schedule, the suicide mission. Do you think we're ever going back, or are they gonna? Is this the first step to upping the ante and maybe not playing 10 SEC games with nothing else, but maybe at least 9 with just a few bunnies thrown in there here and there?
I don't want it full-time. I like the big blue wall, Terry Wilson back, the secondary. You know, this is a pretty unique year for Kentucky. Maybe it'll be the norm moving forward, but I wouldn't want to sign up for this all the time. That's why I think we got lucky that it did happen this year. as ugly as it looks, we're just looking at it from a UK standpoint. Imagine, as you said, Vandy, Arkansas, Missouri, South Carolina, Mississippi State, they're just as scared as everyone else, if not more scared.
Yeah.
I just think this could be a year that Kentucky could take advantage of where everyone's strengths got ripped away.
I'm curious, too, if we were talking swing games, Chuck. The one that I think can really tee you up for an incredible year, because it, even if you lose this Auburn game, if you beat Tennessee, you got a chance to go 5-1 or 4-2 going into the bye. And there's nothing like beating your rival, especially when your rival is kind of the flavor of the month and everybody's loving what Jeremy Pruitt's doing. That's my kind of swing game for the season. Hell, was the last win at Neyland like 1983 or something crazy like that? It's been a long damn time since that happened. I want to see that one to really kind of carry momentum where the following week, you know, we talk about Georgia being a tough opponent, but Georgia will be coming in fresh off of a game at Alabama. If you can beat Tennessee and start feeling good about yourself, you're going to talk yourself into to winning that Georgia game at home. You just are. Especially after the way that they've recruited like dogs, but they're not completely healthy. They're replacing most of their offensive line. So I think that Tennessee game can get us dreaming big once again if something like that happens. And, Chuck, I'm curious what you think your big kind of swing game could be for this season.
I agree with you in that, yeah, Tennessee is a rival. We hate them. That's a swing game. But I'm going to side with Drew here because you think about SEC football, you think of Auburn way before you think of Tennessee. And you think of Ole Miss way before you think of Tennessee. Or, you know, those were kind of, I don't want to call them powerhouses, but, I mean, they kind of are. I mean, when I think of Auburn, I think of Gus Malzahn being a baller and Cadillac Williams and Cam Newton and Nick Marr. I mean, all these crazy players. So if you can go in and win that first game, I think that's big because, again, they have that history. And, gosh, I wish they were allowing 100% fans because I'd travel to that stadium in a heartbeat.
That's a bummer.
But I think that's big. If you can start 1-0 and really get those kids to believe, hey, you know, on Monday after that game, we win. Great game. We come back on Monday and Stoops can say, hey, we just beat, you know, a historic program. We kicked their butts. Hopefully he's saying that. You know, what are we going to do the next 9 games? What are we going to do with Lane Kiffin? And, you know, all these offensive guys, I'm sure Lane Kiffin was trying to recruit them to FAU, probably tried to snag him to Ole Miss at the last second. You know, he's a great offensive mind. I think if you can beat Auburn, you can take down Joey Freshwater, Sweetwater, whatever his name is, start out 2-0, and you can look at these kids and say, why don't we go 10-0? I think the first game is the most important. And, you know, like if we go into Auburn and we get beat 50-0, it's not going to be good. We go into Auburn, we win. It's going to be unbelievable.
I do.
That's
like
where I'm at.
You, that's such a Stoops line. Like, our next game's our most important game. The first game's the most important game. Like that.
And I mean, I wouldn't be saying that if we were playing Eastern Michigan. I mean, what's the swing game? Oh, the first game, Eastern Michigan. No, I'd say, oh, it's right here in the middle of the schedule. But when your first game's Auburn at Auburn and all eyes are on you and you've been saying how we've been building this team forever and we're right there. You know, last year was a fluke. We lost our quarterback. We still had a great year, blah, blah, blah. We got Terry back. We got depth. All right, we'll prove it. Prove it against an SEC powerhouse. All right, well, let's do it. 1-0, baby. That's what I'm saying.
Now, I think when you look at this too, you see the big names on this schedule. You see Alabama and Florida as two of the last three to end the season. You're trying to figure out, okay, which one of these games is the big upset? Freddie, what team right here do you think is the most ripe for the picking when it comes to for the Wildcats to pull off an upset?
You're talking about at the back end of the schedule?
I'm just in the entire 10-game slate. Who you think is most ripe for an upset?
Well, first of all, I'm shocked that Kentucky's an 11-point underdog to Auburn, to be quite honest with you.
That it.
I don't know if I would call that an upset, to be, you know, to be completely honest, I mean, I see this as an even matchup. I see this as a pick'em game. Auburn will not have home field advantage because of the crowd limitations. So I would say a true upset would be Alabama because, again, I see Florida as a pick'em, as two even teams. So the only team that I see on this schedule, well, Georgia and Alabama, but Alabama in Tuscaloosa would be the biggest upset on the schedule.
The thing about that game is there's a lot of kind of scenarios where Kentucky is almost like a trap game, and none are greater than the Alabama game because you got LSU the week before, they've got the Iron Bowl the week after. You can see that scenario, but Drew, we didn't get the early Alabama game, which I was hopeful for. I really, really wanted to see Mac Jones. I don't think we're going to get him that late.
I really wanted Alabama first, but a lot of the reasons work with Auburn too. Except I wanted Mac Jones, but other than that, the list of why I wanted Alabama still plays with that Auburn game. That's why I was so happy. But if we can't go 10-0, I'm thinking we lose at Alabama, but we beat Florida, and then we beat Alabama and Atlanta in the rematch when it matters. How about
ooh,
that?
I like
we
that.
Go 9-1. We lost at Tuscaloosa, but guess who's there in Atlanta for the rematch?
Oh man, that's You can't beat us twice in a row, am I right?
Nick Saban has never beat Mark Stoops twice in one season.
That's facts. Facts from Drew Franklin. The thing, too, that Freddie mentioned about it being a pick'em of Florida, Florida might not have all of their best players. In their first practice, their top three wide receivers weren't there. And if somehow their tight end catches wind of this and he's like, well, hell, I might opt out too, they might just have – to bring Charles Walker back in to be their wide receivers because they'll just be out of players. So I think the back end of the schedule too that could be a benefit is like we don't know how coronavirus, how opt-outs, like this stuff can change rapidly. And I know we're kind of putting our blinkers on to all of that right now, but that Florida team may not look like the Florida team it was supposed to be in week two by the time November rolls around. So just keep that in mind.
Actually thought up, what if a guy, an NFL caliber player, has a great first six games? I mean, perfect. And he's healthy and he's like, you know what? I made it this far. They got my senior tape. Numbers aren't any better. I'm opting out for the last three or four games.
I think that's the new opting out of a bowl game decision that players are going to have to make, to be quite honest with you, Drew. I think that's a great point. It's a valid point. And I think that's something that we're going to see.
Yeah, I don't expect it to happen a lot, but say a Florida QB is just lighting it up. And then maybe, you know, the week before, people are like, man, you had a great year. They're raving about you. You could sit out now and you're a first, second round pick. Somebody do it. I'm not saying it's going to be a phenomenon across the board, but you just really never know with this year. And having some of those better teams late, you don't know what could happen to their rosters.
This isn't like directly applied to this player because he's only a sophomore and their schedule sets up nicely. But take a guy like Derek Stingley, who's a real kind of just a complete game changer on the defensive side of the football. If their team loses a few games and you've already played well halfway through the season, then well, I can't get a national championship. I mean, what the hell's the point of finishing this out? You know, I good job,
Drew. See this happening. Again, it's not a lot, but say we play South Carolina last, right, in Lexington?
Yes.
If I've made it nine games and I'm looking at my millions of dollars and we're still – COVID's everywhere, we haven't made much progress, I might be like, you know what, I don't feel like flying to Lexington for this one game. Call me selfish. We're out of it anyway, whatever. I got good tape. I'm not going.
Yeah. Man, Drew Franklin just making great points.
He is.
Great points all around. Man, my dog just came in the room and ripped the nastiest fart. I mean, it is just absolutely horrid. And I'm frankly disturbed and curious if she got into anything because that's the only thing that would make sense as to why this fart smells so bad.
Duke.
Oh, man. The poops aren't that bad yet. It's when he starts eating real food that things are just going to get a little bit wonky.
Nick, why don't you walk us through yesterday? Freddie, I don't know if you were on, but the Mark Stoops Zoom situation. I wasn't a live participant. I watched the replay, but as a media member having to do this with what, probably 50 people on at once?
There was a lot of people.
How was practice one?
It was, so the Zooms after practice with Gran, Landon Young and Terry Wilson and AJ Rose, those went well. They had a nice little pace to them. There was some tempo. And you only had maybe a dozen or so reporters on. But for Stoops, the season opener, this was almost like media day, where instead of having 50 people crowded in that media room, they're on a Zoom call. And there was 3 pages of, like, Brady Bunch. I mean, it's the most people I've ever seen in a Zoom call. And naturally, you know, a lot of people just wanted to get their voices heard. You know, he got asked about home field advantage about 17 times and said the same thing every single time. They kept asking. And things got really awkward when they tried to call in Buzz Baker, and something wasn't working. And so they just moved on to Dick Gabriel. Dick Gabriel asked kind of a serious question about Chris Oates and just the linebackers in general. And as Stoops, you know, he kind of starts, well, you know, Chris, it was really – we hated to see what happened for him. And then all of a sudden you hear, long-time listener, first-time caller here, Buzz Baker. And he just keeps talking, and he just does not stop. He doesn't know what's happening. He just keeps asking the question. And Stoops' face was just like, not sure really what's going on here. And Tony Neely's trying to cut off Buzz, but Buzz is just – he's Buzz Baker at this point. And so finally, Buzz stops talking. They basically press reset and kick Buzz down the curb to let Dick ask his question. But I thought for a second that somebody had just like hijacked the stream, that there was just some Joe regular fan taking over to try to mess up Stoops and throw him off his groove.
That made it onto the replay they posted online for everyone to watch. And I mean, of all the questions to come up, a very serious matter, and Dave Baker was 10 times louder than anyone had been the entire press conference, shouting, long-time listener, first-time caller. It was just a preview of what's to come with all this Zooming.
Yeah, we're not going to be in their faces asking interviews. All of the interviews are going to be done via Zoom. So it's going to be different. It's going to be different, but like everything else, just something we got to get used to. But, you know, it's not bad.
Not as many miles on your car this fall.
No, not as many miles. And now, instead, I get to hang out with my son in between, so that's fun. But it's not like I got all this free time where I'm like Charles Walker playing Valhalla, just, you know, on the reg. No big deal. How was that, by the way?
Not on the reg. That was a first-time player.
Oh.
First-time caller there. It was great. It was I have been doing a little bit of golf and a lot of insurance.
Did get
to play Valhalla. That was great. Course is in good shape. The fairways are kind of getting fried a little bit. So oh. Sorry for all the Valhalla listeners. Please don't send me hate mail or anything. Most of them agree that the fairways are getting fried. But, I mean, every tee box you step on and just go, man, that's a golf hole. I mean, it's – and then, you know, every other course you can do that once or twice. It felt like every tee box I stepped up on went, man, can't wait to not know where my tee shot's going.
Did you shoot an 84?
It could be over there. Could be over there. Shot 85, actually.
Oh, yeah. See, and I 85, very believable score. Very believable.
First time, you know, I didn't play some holes correctly. Just whatever. Maybe go lower next time. Maybe go higher. Who cares? Got to play it. Bought like 3 t-shirts. So it was fun.
You spent more money at the pro shop than you did anywhere else.
Yes, absolutely.
How's it like to have a caddy when you golf too? Like, I've always.
So we actually didn't do a 4 caddy. I wanted to do the whole experience where we walk it and we have a caddy. We just did the, you know, carts, and that, I think that was the most cost efficient way this time.
Fair enough.
But it's great having a caddy. I've done it before. It's also kind of awkward. You know, the guys in the PGA, they know their caddies, and, you know, they can get mad at them if they say, go here, go there, and they do it and it's bad. You kind of have your own caddy, and he tells you, yeah, you need to go here, and then you do exactly what he says. Then you're in a terrible spot. You're like, well, what the heck, stranger I just met 3 minutes ago? You're supposed to help me out. And it's weird, you know, just having some guy hand you all your clubs the whole time. I don't know. I just think it's weird. Like, yeah. I can get it. I'm like Happy Gilmore. Those are my clubs, all right?
No.
I would not be good with caddies. I was at a golf club out here for a year, and they, like, come out and get it out of your car. And I'm like, no, I'm capable of carrying my – and not cheap, like, I didn't want to tip them. I just feel like I'm capable of carrying my own things.
Yep.
My move too is to go to the pro shop first, then bring the cart back to the car. And it's not out of laziness for the clubs. It's so you can get your bag of beers in the back of the golf cart.
Oh yeah. Got to do that.
Yeah. That's come on. Beginner move right there. I mean, everybody does that.
I agree.
Yeah.
What's the tailgating situation now, back on the football topic?
Whew.
You know?
We don't know. Here's the thing. If they're going to have fans in the stands, they're going to have to offer them parking. The thing that I wonder about is I don't think you can tell those people who are paying to park, like, you can't sit out and, like, you can't eat a meal or drink a beer before you go in. Now, I think what they might do is have, like, tailgate police come by and make sure that there aren't, like, giant parties or anything, because the last thing they want is for that to go to be on, like, an Andy Beshear press conference where they've got, like, a picture of a bunch of fans at a UK tailgate. But who's to stop, you know, there's, like, a church across the street that has a bunch of people that pay to park there. There's a bunch of college houses. Who's going to stop those people from having a tailgate of sorts? So I think we'll have it to a degree. It won't look the same. But I do think that UK will have some sort of a lengthy list of rules, like, only people on our property can have passes and be going into the game, stuff like that.
Yeah, they'll have to cover their own asses a little bit. I assume if we have it, they'll probably be like, you can only hang out with the people you came with. Mm-hmm. And then people will mingle, and UK will be like, we told them not to, you know. So,
right.
Just didn't know if you had heard anything on that front, because I know a lot of people are interested in finding out.
I do think that if you've made plans to go on road trips, sorry about you. It's probably not going to happen. And also, this is going to be one of those years where it's probably better to just get the crew over to watch the game in the basement in front of a bunch of recliners, because
or KS Bar and Grill.
Yes, one of the two. Which, by the way. I think I might have to – Bland's Friday night? $5 Bland's at the bar? Oh, man.
I'll be there. Urban night. Get in there.
Man, that's a hell of a deal. And you can't even, like, find Bland's places. That you just can't. You can't find it. So, exactly. Except at KS Bar Friday night. I think that we actually should probably get together at KS Bar at some time and do this whole podcasting thing. We just got to keep the positive vibes rolling with football, Freddie. We got to keep the train on the tracks. I know we're going to find out about high school football on Thursday. Hopefully that's a go. So I'm liking all the optimism I'm hearing, Freddie, because last week when the Big Ten just, like, what the hell were they doing? Because it sounds like the ADs and presidents don't even know what the hell they were doing.
Yeah, that's an unorganized mess, if you ask me. And I think other conferences are going to reap off that through recruiting and other aspects, because, I mean, you know, they were very vague in their announcement. And now the parents are demanding meetings with the commissioner. It's just – it's a mess, you know. And I think that, you know, the Big Ten is one of the better conferences out there. And I think Ohio State – to be quite honest, is the best team in the country. And I feel bad for those kids that aren't going to get a chance to go out and win a national championship. So that's a tough deal for those guys. But, it's a dog-eat-dog world. So, you know, I think Vince Marrow and coaches like that are going to try to reap benefits on a conference that has failed to communicate with his players and his parents and made a hasty decision. And it is what it is, no matter what. You know, because the SEC could eventually decide not to play as well. But I think the time lapse and the way it was handled by the Big Ten was very poor.
And it really was more or less, they gave out a plan and said, hey, if you follow these rules, we can play. And they never really gave the plan a shot. And I think that's what frustrated most. Whereas the SEC, they're at least, all right, we're gonna try this out. We're going to see how campuses go once students come back. So that's something we can talk about at a later date. But as of right now, the Kentucky football players, they've said it once, they've said it 1,000 times. They feel much safer on campus. And I think it's not just from because they have staff there clean and everything, but it's also football is a good motivator. And having a season to prepare for, I think, you know, that'll be in the back of your mind when trying to decide whether to go to a party or not. Whereas if you don't have football, well, just go to the party. I mean, what else, you know, what else you got to do? So I think that kind of deterrent and motivator isn't being talked about enough in this conversation of will they play, won't they play, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think if there's no football, you're going to have – guys will drop out, grades will go down. You'll see a lot of people that are on the right path completely their way because football was their motivation.
There's a – I've seen some of these guys really, really get into great shape too because of football. I mean, I know you mentioned Drake Jackson earlier, but there was a couple. I was looking through this list of some guys who are just, I mean, they look rocking and ready to roll. One of them's a newcomer, and that's from the state of Mississippi, Josiah Hayes. He's going to be rocking 99. Great, great defensive line number for a big guy. 6'3", 314 pounds from Horn Lake. I can't do that Mississippi accent, but when he says Horn Lake, it's just, mwah. Oh, it's beautiful. Horn it's Lake. Beautiful, Freddie. Oh, man, that kid, that's a football player right there, Freddie Maggard.
One that jumped out at me was Jamin Davis at 6'4", 234. He's put on weight. DeAndre Square is up to 224. And Isaiah Cummings, Nick, correct me if I'm not wrong, is 6'4". 228.
Yeah, they have it technically as 6'3", but his hair, I'll give him that extra inch. 228. He's only been there for a month.
Yeah. Yeah, that jumped out at me as well.
He's rocking number 84, Drew. I mean, I can't wait to just say, "Oh, Cummings mossed on him." I mean, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
It's funny you said him and Josiah Hayes, cuz I mean, I'm not as tuned in as you, especially this year, but in the few conversations I've had, I've heard both of those names mentioned right away as new guys to watch.
And then Chris Rodriguez at 224.
Man,
that is a load. Trust me. Well,
so Eddie Grand said something yesterday after practice that it made me so happy, Freddie, because you know, Eddie, he's always been we're going to give the hot hand the ball. They did that last year and it worked. Albeit with a few times where the games where the guys would hit the wall, they needed the three back rotation because just the physicality of the league. But yesterday, Eddie Grant said, "We're going to be subbing based off of personnel and who does best in these situations." Which I think that means we're going to see Chris Rodriguez on third and short instead of just like having AJ Rose.
No, we'll see AJ Rose. We'll see AJ Rose. I think we've done this before.
I like that all three of them are over 200 pounds. And that's
and to that point, though, he talked about AJ said he spent a lot of the offseason working on his route running and pass catching. I know Chuck, you kind of joked about him being third and short, but third and long, third and seven, I could see him even just being like an emergency jump off, taking that ball and going 20 yards down the field.
Well, why not when you can match him up with an SEC linebacker that's used to blitzing and tackling and run stop, throw out AJ on a wheel, have two slants, man-to-man, AJ on a wheel against a linebacker, touchdown, baby. God, just give me the OC call. I'll do it all year long.
Oh,
do you all see we had Anthony White on our show a week ago, and we were talking about – little advantages you'll get that you don't even know you'll have yet with COVID. And he mentioned Max Duffy rolling out and no crowd to get loud to notify anyone to turn around. And that never crossed my mind. You know, in a real game with thousands of people, if Max Duffy tucks it when he's rolling out to punt and runs everyone on the field is going to know within seconds, because on a normal punt, you don't just – people don't start screaming and standing up. So little things like that, he mentioned, never even entered my brain. So you, especially Charles and Freddie that played the game, have you thought of anything that it might be game one and they're like, holy cow, we didn't think we have this huge advantage right here due to no fans or whatever it may be. Little advantages that might show themselves as we go on here.
Well, I, you know, thinking about the scenario that Anthony said, it could go the other way too, because you know, when it's a play action pass, you know, the sideline screams pass, right? Mm-hmm. And when it's a fake, the sideline would scream whatever. So it could go either way. So, I mean, I think not having fans in the stands, you know, the sideline is going to be more of a communication.
Much more chatty.
Yeah, much more chatty than before.
You'll hear pass run calls through the speaker,
pass,
I'm sure.
Run, you fake, know, all that kind of, you know. I don't know.
But
if
is
I can
that as good as 50,000 people at once just roaring? Because I don't care where you're on the field. You're like, okay, something is happening.
Yeah.
You can hear the sidelines that close?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if the fans are roaring, no. But if the fans aren't there, you're going to hear the sidelines, you know, much more clearly. And, you know, it's a lot like a high school game, to be quite honest with you, because when you go, you know, you'll hear pass, you'll hear, you know, run, you'll hear all this other stuff. And I think the sidelines are going to be vital. And there's going to probably be a coach or a GA or something assigned to do that with the sidelines. So it's a unique year. It's going to be crazy all around.
Yeah, that one might not be the one. That one he said sounded good to me, but I bet there are some things that no one's even thought about that mid-game they're going to see a little spot and it's working out for somebody.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Drew.
Well, and hell, I mean, go back to what we don't want to think about, but that Florida game back in, I guess it was like 2017, sneaking the guys on the field. I think some stuff like that, I think you might be able to get away with some things. Or the good old-fashioned left tackle eligible kind of deal. Maybe I'm just getting, I'm already on the trick plays now that Chuck's talking about running wheel routes with the running backs. But maybe with some stuff like that, I mean, you would think the sideline would be active enough. I just think that the home field advantage, while it won't necessarily play as much of a factor in the game, I think it will at the start of games, in that the other team, I'm sure travel is going to be weird with COVID stuff going state to state. Having, you know, you're probably going to have testing involved in some sort of capacity. I know they're talking about adding a third test for the day of. The comfortable surroundings, I think, will play an advantage for the home team, at least at the beginning of the game. Because, I mean, what if, let's just say, I don't know that these are the exact scenarios, but what if a team's just got to be at the stadium X amount of hours before the game? If you're the home team, you've got nice digs. If you're the away team, hell, at Iowa, it's like a pink room, you know? Like, they're, you don't necessarily have the nicest amenities as a home team might. So I think if you are the home team, you can get off to a nice start against some of these teams. Maybe that's a small advantage. Maybe I'm just grasping at straws, but there's stuff there. There's definitely stuff there.
It could be. I mean, if it's a UK-Tennessee situation or similar distances, would teams even drive down day of, which would – they're doing it to be safe, but that could throw off their morning routine and getting fired up for the game. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but there's going to be so many new things that are new to everyone.
I think experience and leadership are going to be vital because, Charles, I mean, you scrimmage in empty stadiums before, and it kind of stinks. You know, it's one way or the other. I mean, it's not very much fun, to be quite honest with you. But if you have a veteran, experienced team like Kentucky, with solid leadership, as it appears that it has, I think, again, that's why I like Kentucky in this schedule, because you're going to play in virtually empty stadiums, and you're going to have to be motivated one way or another. You're not going to be motivated by the crowd, so it's going to be self-motivation, and that comes from leadership and experience and the want-to that comes from a team that has a lot of returning starters, a lot of future pros. And those are the things that Kentucky had.
There's one player I wanted to mention that we didn't has no experience that we didn't even know was going to be on the team till Stoops announced yesterday that Torrence Davis is going to play linebacker for the Cats. He signed as a running back, listed at 6'2", 220. Kentucky needed some bodies inside. We didn't know if he was going to be eligible or not and if he was going to sign in. Now they've got at least a fifth guy in that inside linebacker room on scholarship to kind of help back up Jamin Davis, who Freddie mentioned earlier, in DeAndre Square. So good to have another body in that inside linebacker's room, but I don't think they'll need him that much this year. I'm anxious to see what Marquez Bembry can do. Maybe he has a Jamin Davis-like year where he can kind of – might be a sluggish start, but towards the end, Davis averaged like 7 tackles a game over his last 4 games last year. Really had a great month in November. So did Chris Rodriguez. Rodriguez averaged like 9 yards per carry in November. So guys like that who got stronger at the end of the year, I expect to hear from a lot. Freddie, who are some guys that you think fans will be hearing from some throughout camp as we talk to coaches about what's happening during preseason practices?
Well, I think you look at experience again with Devontae Robinson at safety because there's going to be a lot of young defensive backs that have the ability to play. Some won't, some will. But having Devontae back provides some leadership and stability in the secondary. I look at the receiver position and the newcomers there. Josh Ali is going to have to establish himself as a go-to number one receiver in the Southeastern Conference. We'll see if he can do that. But in my opinion, all eyes are on the guard position. Will it be Kenneth Horsey? Will it be Austin Dotson, RJ Adams? Will it be, you know, another newcomer? Because I think with 4 starters on the offensive line that are projected as somewhere to be all SEC and to the NFL, if you solidify that left guard position, then you're looking at potentially the best offensive line in the country. So, for me, that's where my eyes are fixated on. And also, something that we've not talked about is Blake Best snapped for field goals and punts, and he's gone. So there's going to be a new snapper, and that's a vital position. So I mean, you don't think about it until something goes wrong, but that's a position we need to be looking at as well.
Man, leave it up to Freddie to bring up the long snapper. That's why we love you, Freddie.
Guys, I got a meeting. I got to run. So it's been fun. I appreciate it. Miss you guys.
Yeah. Let's do it more regularly now.
Absolutely. Nick, you and Adam are doing a great job. Appreciate what you guys are doing on the side. You're busting your tail and providing some great content out there.
Oh, well, thanks, Freddie.
All right, gentlemen. Have a good day.
All right, you too, Freddie. Well, right. I think we're going to get, you know, almost everybody out of here in a second. But was Kelly Mason your old snapper for the long time, Chuck?
Yeah, so we had, I guess, 2 years with Kelly and then 2 years of Tristan Yemmons. Maybe 3 of Kelly, 1 of Tristan, but then Tristan was on for 2 or 3.
Reliability.
Yeah, and, I mean, Freddie brings up a good point. Tristan was really athletic. He actually played – quarterback in high school, which, I mean, you know, he was from Georgia, a good quarterback. But when you have an athletic center that can run down and actually be a cover man on punt, that's pretty big deal.
Now he just turned into a quarterback except between his legs. Yeah, perfect transition.
Much. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know Freddie's we're close to leaving, but I can't believe we did long snapper before you all tell me if I need to worry about kicking this year.
Oh man, I don't
know the answer.
We can leave it if we don't know. That's fine. We don't have to throw anyone under the bus. We haven't seen anything yet. We'll just wait and see.
Is it the Italian meatball that's going to do it? Spicy Italiano?
See, I like spicy Italiano, but I think you need to give Chance Poor another chance. So
I agree.
So I
agree. But what about spicy Italiano? Is he not get a chance? I mean,
no, he's gonna get a chance. I think this is gonna be an underrated aspect of camp, and frankly, it's an underrated part of Hard Knocks. I don't know why they aren't focusing every show on the kicking competition, because frankly, that's all anyone cares about. I mean, ratings were historically low for the opener, and I think it's because they didn't show enough kicking.
Fully agree. I said this to Nick earlier in a text, but I'll say it here. With Austin, you have the old guy in camp, at least for newcomers, former financial advisor, they love being like, oh, he used to bag groceries and he just kicked a field goal. They might mention he did some stupid podcast. He was 10 for 10 in the XFL and it got shut down. He has so many nice stories that Hard Knocks usually brings out of people. I just don't think there's any way it goes ignored.
No, you're
against the Chargers. You got two teams, so there's twice the players for TV time. You got COVID, but the Rams losing a 7-year starter. I think he'll get a key piece of one episode. I think we're gonna have a big Austin show.
I agree.
And especially just to get that they're big on throwing the old montages of previous games in. They can use some Alliance footage. They can use some XFL footage. So like,
I forgot about Alliance. His luggage was in the lobby when he got back to the hotel. I mean, this is
see, I think exactly.
The reason they haven't gotten him to it yet is, I mean, there's Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, New Cities. There's a lot of stories to get to. Yeah. I think they'll save him for the finale.
They had Austin Eckler. Yeah.
Justin Herbert has great hair with the Chargers.
Man, that is some good hair. Yeah. And some excellent hair. Ooh, there's one thing, too, that kind of got overlooked because of the timing of it. I think the news didn't break till like 10:30, 11 o'clock. But Ray Lewis's kids are now Kentucky Wildcats. And what I really like, so their names are Rashad and Rashawn. I believe I'm spelling the second name right, Rashawn. And they are back-to-back numbers. Back-to-back numbers. So, I mean, first off, it's smart from a branding standpoint that you know that – let me see. So, yeah, Rashawn is 28. Rashad is 27. But, like, I mean, those coaches are going to get him confused nonstop, right?
I don't even know – let's be honest, both of them, they've been all over the place. What class are they at? One's like a senior, right?
Rashad is a grad transfer senior. He'll be able to play right away. He played for Coach Bo, the new receivers coach at Utah State, as like a freshman. And Rashawn is the one who went from – he went to UCF. Scott Frost leaves, so he left. He goes to FAU. Lane Kiffin leaves, so he left. And now he's playing wide receiver with his brother at UK.
And so, what is he class-wise?
I guess he's technically like a sophomore.
Oh, okay.
But I guess I'll have to sit out, so he'll probably only have 2 years of eligibility, I would assume.
As long as we get Ray Lewis doing the Ray Lewis dance down the catwalk at one game, I don't care how good his sons are. I just want that.
Now the most famous player dad of the Stoops era. Suck it, Sting. You got a backseat to Ray Lewis, Super Bowl champ.
What about Boom's dad? He used to lead the catwalk.
Oh,
I think we're going in national recognition.
Yeah,
favorite of dads.
If Ray Lewis shows up wearing shoulder pads with spikes on to the catwalk, though,
and cleats,
is he? Are those the two most famous dads we've had so far? Sting, and Boom Williams' dad.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think.
Some dads like to DM me when I don't speak well of their son's performance.
That happens. Yeah. Oh, man, I can't think of any other ones.
I think that's it from my time.
Yeah, well, there's surely some famous dads out there that we don't know about. Bill Allen, I would say he's a very famous dad.
How about Lynn Bowden? Josh Allen.
Oh, there you go. Josh Allen, definitely most famous dad. Which, by the way, dad strength, not all about brute force. You got to have some agility. You got to be able to navigate the creaks of your floor in your house. Don't want to wake the kid up. A lot more to dad strength than what people initially realize. It's developed strength.
Being ever changing. Being alert on very little sleep, I assume. Lots of things.
How to make iced coffee so you can enjoy that in the afternoon.
Okay.
Yep.
Iced coffee. You lost me there. I'm a hot coffee guy.
Hey, I was the same way until this year, and now it's a real game changer.
There you go.
No.
I make a mean iced coffee. I'll send you the recipe, but go ahead, Charles.
All right, please do that. One, I do say that it is hard. I met with a prospect at about 10 a.m. for coffee, which is late to me, but I'm like, all right, whatever. He said 10 a.m., I'm there. And I go in, of course, you know, when I'm meeting with the prospect, I kind of just order whatever they order. So they're like, oh, yeah, I like him already. I get an iced coffee, and First couple sips, I just couldn't do it. Finally finished it. I might have to make the switch over. But at 7 a.m., at 6 a.m., I need a hot coffee to wake me up.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely an afternoon drink, definitely for the summertime. I like the caramel addition. They also, you can go vanilla with it too.
I'm a French vanilla creamer.
So
there's cinnamon creamer, like cinnamon biscuit. What are those called? Cinnamon roll creamer biscuit. Oh, God.
Ooh, speaking of,
buys that.
Did you see the new Girl Scout cookie that's debuting this year?
No, what is it?
French toast. And it's, if you all remember the old French Toast Crunch cereal, it has the kind of outline of like a piece of toast, and they're going to be like Oreos. So that, yes, it's going to be like a cinnamony Oreo flavored Girl Scout cookie.
Yeah. I'm in, sold. We got to get Freddy back here and tell him about it.
He might be off the diet real quick. Oh, man. Well, I think it's about time we get out of here, though. I think I got some diapers to change. But it feels good. I mean, we touched on a lot. We're going to have a lot more to discuss. And I'm just excited that we have football to talk about because, as Freddie said, it's hard to get on here and talk about football when football's not happening. And we're back. Football back.
Almost back. We have a schedule.
I know. Hey, that schedule, though, that was pretty awesome. Felt like Selection Sunday.
It's good to see you guys.
Yeah.
It always is.
It's hard to see you behind all that facial hair, but you know what? Close enough, damn it.
Well, after we make it to Atlanta this year, I'll shave it on the 50-yard line.
Good, good. And then I'll mix that in with some grass clippings, and that'll be my souvenir from the SEC championship game. Well, folks, it's been a lot of fun getting the KSR Football Podcast crew together. We'll be back before you know it. Until then, go Cats. Go Kroger-ing.
The peep, the technique.